Think about the last argument you had. Did you walk away feeling closer to the other person, or did you feel more distant than before? Most of us have experienced both outcomes, yet we rarely stop to consider what made the difference. It wasn't the topic of disagreement or even the intensity of emotion, it was the language we used. Every day, our words either build bridges or erect walls between ourselves and others. We speak roughly 16,000 words daily, yet few of us have been taught how to use them to create genuine connection. What if you could transform every difficult conversation into an opportunity for deeper understanding? What if the secret wasn't learning to win arguments, but learning to speak a completely different language, one that honors both your humanity and that of others? At its core, this communication revolution rests on four simple elements: observations, feelings, needs, and requests. Yet, simple doesn't mean easy. Most of us confuse observations with evaluations constantly. When you tell your partner, "You're always on your phone," you think you're stating a fact, but you've actually mixed observation with judgment. The observation would be, "During dinner tonight, you looked at your phone 3 times. Notice the difference? One invites defensiveness, the other invites dialogue." The second element asks us to express feelings, not thoughts disguised as feelings. "I feel like you don't care" isn't a feeling, it's an interpretation. The actual feeling might be loneliness, sadness, or frustration. This distinction matters because vulnerability creates connection, while accusations create distance. When you say, "I feel lonely when we don't talk during meals," you're revealing your inner world rather than attacking someone else's character. We live in a culture obsessed with evaluation. When your colleague misses a deadline, your mind produces a verdict: irresponsible. When your child leaves dishes in the sink, lazy. These judgments feel like observations, but they're interpretations that destroy connection. When someone hears a judgment, their brain perceives threat and activates defensive responses. Blood flow shifts from the prefrontal cortex to the amygdala, making productive conversation neurologically impossible. Meanwhile, the actual observation, the report arrived 2 days after the deadline, triggers no such response. Our addiction to comparison makes things worse, either inflating our egos or deflating our spirits. We also deny responsibility for our choices. "I had to yell, you made me so angry." This language disconnects us from our agency. The truth? Every action reflects a choice to meet some need. Beneath all judgments lies a revolutionary truth. All humans share the same core needs: respect, understanding, autonomy, meaning, connection, and safety. What varies are the strategies we use to meet them. Your teenager needs autonomy. You need safety. When their strategy involves staying out until 2 a.m. and yours involves a midnight curfew, conflict erupts. Focus on needs rather than strategies, and creative solutions emerge. Texting every hour, staying at a trusted friend's house. Suddenly, you're collaborators rather than adversaries. Many of us learned early that expressing feelings meant weakness. "Stop crying, or I'll give you something to cry about." These messages taught us to suppress emotions or express them indirectly through blame, severing connection to our inner compass. Consider how often people respond to "how are you feeling" with thoughts rather than feelings. "I feel like this situation is unfair" expresses an opinion. "I feel manipulated" interprets intentions. "I feel inadequate" describes self-judgment. The real emotions underneath might be frustration, confusion, disappointment, or sadness. English offers thousands of words to judge others, but few to precisely describe our emotional states. Yet feelings are simply information about whether our needs are being met. When we're joyful, our needs are satisfied. When we're anxious, they're not. One hospital administrator discovered this when his polished presentation met physician resistance until he acknowledged his own anxiety. That vulnerability shifted everything. The physician softened and supported the proposal. When someone criticizes you harshly, you have 4 options: blame yourself, blame them, connect with your own feelings and needs, or empathize with theirs. The first two lead to suffering. The latter two create understanding. Beneath every harsh word lies an unmet need. Most of us hint or complain rather than making clear requests. "I need you to be more considerate" tells someone nothing actionable. "Would you be willing to text me if you're running more than 10 minutes late?" gives them something concrete to accept or decline. The difference between requests and demands lies in your response to no. If someone declines and you criticize them, you made a demand. Genuine requests honor autonomy. Coerced compliance creates resentment, not connection. Effective requests use positive action language. Instead of "stop interrupting me," try "would you be willing to let me finish my thought before responding?" After making a request, check understanding. "Would you tell me what you heard me say?" While expressing yourself honestly transforms relationships, receiving others with empathy may be even more powerful. When someone says, "You never spend time with me anymore," resist defending yourself. Instead, offer presence. "Are you feeling lonely because you need more connection in our relationship?" True empathy continues until you notice a physical release, a sigh, relaxed shoulders, softened expression. People need you to witness their feelings, not fix them. When your own pain makes empathy impossible, be honest. "I'm finding it difficult to listen right now because I'm feeling overwhelmed. Would you be willing to give me a few minutes?" While this approach enhances connections with others, its most profound application may be internal. Most of us maintain a brutal inner dialogue, "I'm so stupid, I always mess everything up," that we'd never use with others. This internal violence blocks our capacity for genuine empathy. When you're at war with yourself, compassion for others becomes nearly impossible. Self-compassion begins with translating self-judgments into unmet needs. Instead of "I'm such an idiot for forgetting that meeting," try "I'm feeling disappointed because I value reliability and want to honor my commitments." Notice the shift from character assassination to acknowledging values and needs. Perhaps you spoke harshly because you needed respect. The strategy was ineffective, but the need was legitimate. Transform "have to" into "choose to." When you tell yourself you have to do something, you create internal resistance. By acknowledging that every action is ultimately a choice based on needs you want to meet, you reclaim your agency. Even paying taxes becomes a choice you make because you value living in a society with infrastructure. Self-compassion creates a foundation for authentic connection. You can't genuinely celebrate another's success while constantly measuring yourself against them. You can't offer empathy when your inner critic is screaming. Self-compassion isn't selfish. It's the prerequisite for sustainable compassion toward others. In a culture profiting from division, choosing compassionate communication is revolutionary. This approach works whether others practice it or not. You don't need agreement to speak from observations rather than judgments, express feelings and needs clearly, make requests instead of demands, or offer empathy. These choices are yours, and they're contagious. This isn't about perfection. It's about consciousness, awareness of what you're observing, feeling, needing, and requesting. You'll fall back into old patterns. That's being human. The practice is returning to what would create more connection in this moment. Each pause before judging, each feeling named instead of blame assigned, each need identified beneath frustration rewires conditioning. Your invitation. In your next difficult conversation, pause. Notice judgments, then look beneath them for observations. Feel your feelings without blame. Identify the needs they point to. Make a clear request. Or ask with genuine curiosity, "What matters to you about this?" We're all meeting fundamental needs using different strategies. When we recognize our shared humanity beneath conflicting strategies, conflicts transform into opportunities for deeper understanding. Compassionate communication isn't a destination. It's a practice you return to moment by moment. It asks you to notice habitual patterns that disconnect you from yourself and others, and to choose differently, not perfectly, but persistently. See conflicts as information about unmet needs rather than problems to solve. Replace who's right with what does each person need. When needs are clearly understood, creative strategies emerge that honor everyone involved. What makes this practice sustainable isn't willpower. It's the profound relief of expressing your truth without attack and hearing others' truth without defense. It's the joy of contributing to others' well-being freely rather than from obligation. In a world that tells you to choose sides and win at others' expense, this practice offers something radically different: mutual thriving through creativity, where everyone's needs are honored and new solutions emerge. This is the promise of speaking and listening from the heart. Not that conflict disappears, but that you finally have a way to navigate difficulty that brings you closer to yourself and others rather than driving you apart.